In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become the children of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of the Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. This is the gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
After not having done this for a couple of years, it's kind of terrifying. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into our neighborhood. You don't have to be afraid of the rain. The following incident took place a few months ago at Michigan Masonic Pathways, a large campus for elderly people with varying levels of need located in Alma, Michigan. On this particular day, the weather was pleasant. Staff members were arranging for an Alzheimer's patient to leave one building in order to go for a necessary appointment. But as they approached the door to go outside, she resisted. She protested that it was raining, and that if she were to go outside, she would get wet. At first, they gently explained that actually the weather was clear, and there was no need for her to be concerned. They even invited her to look outside to verify the sense they were making. She remained unconvinced. Increasingly mindful of other tasks that awaited them, the staff spoke with greater insistence that it was not raining, and they really wanted her to cooperate with them, or they might be late. A speech therapist, Heidi Vandermark, happened to notice what was taking place and asked them to wait for a moment because she thought she maybe could do something that would help. She reached into a nearby cupboard and took down a large downy bath towel. She gently draped the towel over the patient's shoulders and explained that she did not have to be afraid of the rain. The towel would keep her dry. The towel would protect her. The Alzheimer patient smiled and cheerfully cooperated with the staff as she complied with their request. The speech therapist had entered the Alzheimer patient's neighborhood. She had joined her in her reality. Something like this is what the gospel writer is trying to help us understand. It is what the journalist ended up doing in the movie The Soloist and in the book by that title. He could not be of help to the raging street musician until he struggled to take a place with him, beside him, in the wild and raving behavior the mentally ill soloist sometimes displayed. and the terrors he alone felt. It did no good at all to insist that it was not raining. So what is our reality this morning? What is the shape of the ache we have not disclosed? What stories do we bring? And what story brought us here? What is the peculiar signature of our pain, loss, failure, or perhaps joy or triumph that would explain why we came to this place at the very beginning of a new year? Is our deepest reality one that we fear others would discount as we try to find a place for a part of the sermon, declaring with utter conviction that from where they stand, the weather is just fine? They might say, why don't you get over it? Why don't you grow up? Why don't you just quit? Why don't you forget him or her? In the Old Testament story of Job, such people were in abundance. One day, Joseph Lister was summoned to assist a wealthy lord with a fishbone that had lodged at the back of his throat. After Lister had skillfully removed the obstruction, the grateful patient asked him what he was owed. My lord, Lister suggested, suppose we settle for half of what you would be willing to give me if the bone was still lodged in your throat. Our personal reality makes all the difference in the world. The Word became flesh. God came to our neighborhood. And John is suggesting that he comes precisely to the place of our most profound reality. As the wedding at Cana suggests, Jesus comes where spirits are high, where love abounds, and where people are bound together by promises and by empathy. But he also comes when our pain does not go away, when our loneliness is the most intense, when we yearn for the girl in chemistry class to smile, or the boy in algebra to notice the braces are gone, when we hope our parents will quit fighting, when we are afraid the pet will die, or fear that we will never have as many friends as we need. Perhaps our reality has been shredded by the contortions that our economy is going through as we stumble toward recovery. Maybe something has happened to us that is similar to what George McLeod of Kenwood, California remembers. A farm with all of its equipment, furniture, and livestock is being sold at auction. The auctioneer stands on an overturned box. The stoop-shouldered farmer is in striped overalls, lingers over at the side, his eyes on the ground, his sun-beaten arms folded across his chest. His family watches from the front door of the small farmhouse. The neighbors are reluctant to bid at first. Now and then someone makes an offer on a piece of furniture or an old tool. The auctioneer cajoles the reluctant crowd, and eventually everything is gone. The wedding china, the old horse, the coffee can full of nails, the farm, everything. Then McLeod concludes, that was 70 years ago near San Antonio, Texas. And it is as though it happened yesterday. The gospel, the message of the gospel story today is that Jesus was at the auction. He was at the side of the farmer and at the side of his wife and children who watched their possessions haul down the driveway in their neighbor's pickup trucks. God became flesh, became our neighbor, joined us in whatever our most intense or intimate reality is. Not to convince us that it isn't raining, that we shouldn't hurt, that we should get over it, but to take his place beside us for as long as it's going to take. Jesus took up the position not because the farmer went to church every week, because they flossed regularly, or had an uncle in the priesthood. Rather, Jesus was there because that is the kind of place where Jesus thrives. You may remember that's what his mother had predicted. He has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he sent empty away. I wonder if there is something else that John would have us ponder. It is more important for us to understand that Jesus is in our neighborhood than it is to have staunch convictions about him, although both can exist together. Strong convictions about his origins, his divinity, his being sinless, his perfection, his power, may serve to keep him at arm's length, may serve to help us feel we are orthodox, rather than to feel that Jesus is right here in the midst of life's paradoxes. There is hardly anything scarier than people convinced of the truth and oblivious to the truth about them that is masked by certainty. Now to shift gears a little bit. I realize this will come as a complete surprise to nearly everyone, but there is some fermentation in our neighborhood over the ball fields down the road where it intersects with Baldwin, and the possibility of a large family fair store and related developments while ball fields are moved to Bower Road a few miles away. If you have heard nothing about it, I'm sure there is someone who would be able to bring you up to date. There are actual hints that disagreements exist over what the community should do. Decisions have been called into question and motives have been assigned or positions that others have taken. We might say that it is just this kind of situation that John had in mind. The Word becomes flesh. The Word becomes flesh and blood and moves into our neighborhood in the engagement of those who say they follow Jesus. They always know that the issues are never as important as the people. They understand that as Jesus bound people together of every race and clan and tribe and viewpoint, we must stay connected so that after the issue is settled, we will not have lost any people. and our relationship with them, which of course applies in tinier neighborhoods too. So if there are some simmering disputes from the holidays, we strive to stay connected. If something is strained in a friendship, can we let Jesus help us stay connected? If some deep wound in a marriage seeps anger and hurt into decisions over cereal and the closing of the garage door, can we let Jesus help us stay connected? Later on, John reminds us that Jesus didn't come into the world to condemn the world, but to save it. So the God who brought all of that is into existence comes to our neighborhood. In Jesus, he comes to our reality and where our hearts are filled with joy, when the news is good, when the children are safely in their beds. He places a large mantle of blessing and joy over our shoulders. And when we are broken, when the days are hard and the nights lonely, when others have no idea of the storm we see coming, it is as though Jesus reaches for a large warm towel to drape over our shoulders and murmurs, "You don't have to be afraid of the rain. I'll be there with you." I invite you to attach the small piece of towel in the bulletin to your locker at school, on a bathroom mirror, or the refrigerator door, as a reminder that Jesus never leaves your side. He's right there in your neighborhood, and he's not leaving anytime soon. And as you join in singing the tender children's hymn, remember Fred Rogers' observation from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, that we are all the ages that we have ever been. Amen.